well in a number of areas that people are not able to see those. But majority because there's certain perception about corruption, but also because corruption has happened. We've got to do our best to clean and ensure that good governance protocols are adhered to. The principles of ethical conduct from national to province to local government, anyone within the sector needs to ensure that we can be above approach in terms of our conduct is very critical in rebuilding the brand of the portfolio, but building trust in our communities. And we believe, Chair, the first primary issue for us is to be transparent in how we do our work so that we can be accountable both to Parliament and to the South African at large. And we believe that will improve our brand awareness and brand strategy in terms of making sure that people see us in a positive light, and also believe that we can be able to turn around the situation. So the issue around dealing decisively with corruption and improving transparency, we do know that we will be coming to the Portfolio Committee to talk about the issue of unfinished projects across the country, what we call blocked projects. We'll account in fully on those. And what is it that we are doing? Because we do believe that it's important as well to have consequence management as we deal with the issues. So, Chair, just those are a few remarks up front as I appear before the committee, just to share what we are doing and where the issues are. I might not go into detail because I don't want to take long. But as we appear before the committee, one would be able to consistently in various areas share the vision, share what is it that we are going to do, but also take guidance from the Portfolio Committee, feedback from the Portfolio Committee while we are being held accountable. I must say I'm looking forward to working well with the committee in terms of support and feedback from you, but also constructive criticism so that we can improve. We do believe that as we are accountable to the committee, you would be able to assist us to be able to improve our quality of work. So thank you very much, Chair. If you allow me, I will allow the DM to make some remarks, and then we hand over to the DG to make him lead the presentation with, together with the team, and then we'll take questions afterwards. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Minister. DM.
I think let us allow the DG, because I'll be repeating what the Minister has already said. So just to save time, let me allow the DG to present. Thank you very much.
Thank you, DM. DG?
Thank you very much, Chairperson, Minister, Deputy Minister, and leaders of the Portfolio Committee. Can I ask Paul or one of my colleagues to share the presentation? Can you put it on slideshow, please, Paul? Thank you very much, Chairperson, honorable members of the Portfolio Committee. We tried to shorten our presentation. The Minister made it very clear to us that the annual report should be as interactive as possible, so we should try and shorten it. So I'm not going to be long. If you allow me, I'll keep my camera off. I can show it on and then switch it off again because the stability of the network is very bad at my place today. Without wasting time, we structure our presentation as follows. We will state the purpose, we will state the budget structure and the highlights. As you know, the APP is structured according to the budget structure. We will talk about the annual performance, and we will then give the financial overview and look at the performance of the grants, and also look at how provinces are performing. Without wasting much time, and we'll also touch on the audit outcome. Chairperson, we'll move into recommendations because there are still quite a number of areas that we're dealing with in the area of human settlements. We're presenting to you the annual report of the Department of Human Settlements for the year that ended on the 31st of March 2021. In terms of the budget structure of the organization, as you know, we have five programs. Program one is administration. Program two is integrated human settlements planning and development program. Program three is informal settlements program. Program four is rental and social housing program. And program five is affordable housing program. The program managers are here. Some of them are doubling up as branch heads. So they will be talking to some of these programs later. In terms of the highlights, Jefferson, we, in the year under review, we presented the Housing Consumer Protection Bill. Minister tabled that bill to Parliament after Cabinet approval. The department is awaiting invitation to brief the portfolio committee. The bill seeks to address the economic transformation of the industry through the introduction of provisions relating to the warranty fund surplus, which may be utilized towards development programs for the home building industry. As you know, the NHPRC is overseeing plus minus 8 billion rands of the funds, and all the funds that are earmarked to deal with some of the challenges that we may experience in the industry if there is the IU.
Did you, we have lost you. I'm not sure whether members can hear you. I've lost you.
Yeah, we seem to have lost the DG. We'll get the team to check check quickly. I think we'll see if we can get one of the DGs to take over, if we can.
Okay.
Apologies about that, Chair.
Okay.
Tolani, quickly ask.
The Housing Consumer Protection Bill will come back to you. I think we will have to prepare for a workshop with yourselves so that we can take you through that Housing Consumer Protection Bill. The next bill is the Human Settlements Development Bank Bill. And as you know, we amalgamated the three entities, NATURE, RALF, and NHFC under the umbrella of the NHFC. So we are three entities that have been amalgamated successfully into one. So we have achieved the what we called the first phase, which is the operational integration phase. The next phase is the establishment phase, which that establishment phase can only be achieved through an act of parliament once this bill is passed or promulgated by yourselves. Next slide. Chairperson, we've categorized our performance into three categories. When it's red, it shows non-achievement. What we contracted to achieve, if it's red, it means it has not been achieved. If it's amber, it means it's partially achieved. And if it's green, it means it's 100% achieved. Next slide. This pie chart, Chairperson, is only intended to show you the nature of the achievement and non-achievement as well. 55% of what we conducted to achieve in the year under review was achieved, and 30% was partially achieved, and 15% was not achieved. Chairperson, in terms of the five programs that we talked about earlier, program one, which is admin, we had 7 targets in this program. We only achieved 2 programs, partially achieved 5 out of 7. In program 2, which is integrated human settlements program, the targets in the APP, we had 14 targets in this program. We achieved 8 out of 14, and 3 were partially achieved and 3 non-achieved. In program 3, which is ISP, informal settlements upgrading program, we started the year with 6 targets, contracted to deliver 6 targets in this program. We achieved 3 out of 6, partially achieved 2, and 1 was not achieved. In the rental and social housing program, Chairperson, we contracted in the beginning of the year in our APP to deliver 7 targets. We achieved 4 out of 7, 2 partially achieved, and 1 not achieved. In the affordable housing space, we contracted in the beginning of the year to start the year. We started with 6 targets. We achieved 5 out of 6 and not achieved 1. Overall, Chairperson, in numbers, in quantitative terms, the organization had 40 targets in the beginning of the year in PP. And out of the 40 targets, we achieved 22, and 12 were not achieved. But Chairperson,
your network is very bad. We've lost the DG. We have lost the DG.
Chairperson, I really don't know why I am frequently losing the data because, sorry, the network, because the data is very stable. I'm using my data. It's full at 4G. Chairperson, again, it's the same slide that we have presented in quantitative terms. Slide number 10. We're just using the bar charts, but it's exactly the same thing. We showed it previously using the numbers, but here we're showing the bar charts, so we're not going to waste much of your time on this one. I think, can we move to the next slide, please? Okay. Here we're only intending to show you the performance per quarter. As you know, Chairperson, we started the year in quarter one slowly, and I think we presented that quarter to you until we got affected by COVID-19. In quarter two, we closed. If you look at quarter one, there was no activity in the sector. It was between the 25th of March and the 30th of September. The contractors were pulled out completely, so there wasn't much activity. But in quarter two, there was slight recovery. And quarter two, even though there wasn't much activity, there was slight recovery. In quarter three, this was the recovery quarter because most contractors went back on site and professionals started doing the work in September up to December. As you can see, that figure is going up. Even in quarter four, which is January to March, the graph is going up. So there was a recovery to be made in quarter three and quarter four. So again, this is demonstrating quarterly performance in numerical terms. The previous slide was demonstrating performance using the graph. Next slide, please. Can we move to the next slide, Paul? Am I frozen? Next slide, please. Can we move to slide 13? Thank you very much. Here, Chairperson, perhaps without wasting much of your time, because we want to make this as interactive as possible, and I'm sure early in the day you've met with the AG and you've met with the DPME and they have interrogated this. So this is just administration. We're getting more into details. What I've given you earlier is executive summary. This again shows the target administration. In slide 13, this is the target in program one.
DG, we can't hear you. It's Honourable Powell.
We've lost DG again, and the presentation. Okay, just come back. DG. DG, we've lost you.
Chair, let the minister deploy another resource.
Yeah, because there is even left the system.
Minister, apologies about that. Colleagues, can I request that DDG Corporate Services takes the administration part, DDG CFO takes the financial, and as per programs, so that we are able to move.
Good afternoon, Minister. Did you want me to continue?
Please continue on administration, DDG Corporate Services, followed on the finances, followed by DDG. I think let's just do that.
Good afternoon, Minister. Good afternoon, portfolio committee members. Good afternoon, all my colleagues. I'll continue with this slide, which is the DG was speaking about the target, the 100% implementation of the approved internal audit plans. Sorry, somebody has moved the slide. Can we go back, please? Sorry, is this the slide? Can we go back one slide back, please? Sorry, Minister, the slide left me as I was speaking.
Yeah, it seems like the presentation is off the script.
Yes, Minister.
Paul?
I was speaking regarding the internal implementation plan. Thank you very much. Now we are on a different slide. Can we kindly go back to the slide which I was speaking on the internal audit plans? Oh, Minister, should I continue speaking on this current slide?
So this is a slide that the DG has left us with. I'm not sure whether you want to jump to.
Okay, no problem. So we all agree that we are on slide number 13, and I'll continue from there. So the target was unaudit, unqualified audit opinion, with no matters of emphasis. With regard to that, our performance was that we did get an unqualified audit opinion, and there were no matters of emphasis on the financial statements and the material findings on performance information on program 3. The auditor did raise some material findings with regard to the usefulness of the indicators, and we are going to strive harder to improve our indicators and the measurements thereof. The target was 100% compliance with the statutory tabling and prescripts, and the performance we performed in terms of that, we performed 81% compliance with statutory tabling and prescripts. The following areas were complied with: administrative support, our APPs and strat plans, quarterly and annual performance report, interim and annual financial statements, midterm expenditure framework, estimation of the national expenditure ENE, monthly early warning systems report, departmental procurement plan, qualitative assessment. The following things were not achieved in the terms of this particular target. There were late responses on the parliamentary questions with regard from provinces and municipalities, and a total of 94 out of 5,263 invoices were not processed on time due to COVID, as the officials were self-isolated. So we are striving to ensure that going forward, we will improve on these findings. Next slide, please. The next slide is 100% implementation on the approved internal audit plan. 91% implementation of the approved internal plans was achieved, whereas and there are 30 out of 33 audits were completed as per the internal audit plan, which translates into 91%. And there are 3 audits which are still in progress, but however, they were delayed due to the verification of the status of the temporary residential units due to inconsistent status report on the TRU's project. Again, the next target was 100% of the approved anti-fraud and corruption implementation plan implemented. In that aspect, we managed 89% of the approved anti-fraud and corruption implementation plan was obtained. And the first issue there is the preliminary investigation. The reasons were that the preliminary investigation could not be concluded due to capacity constraints. The anti-fraud and corruption strategy was reviewed. At the same time, it has not been presented for approval because DPA has not yet concluded its sector-wide anti-fraud and corruption strategy. The Department of Human Settlement strategy must be aligned to one of the DPSA before it is approved, and hence we have only achieved 89% in this area. The next target was 100% implementation of the approved risk management plan. We performed 100% in this area in terms of our risk management plan. 12 out of 12 activities that we undertook were achieved, and hence it is 100%. 100%, our target was 100% implementation of the HR implementation plan. We have not done very well in this area. We will definitely try to improve on it. 54% of the implementation plan was achieved. Out of 87 activities, we only managed to do 47 activities as per our annual human resources implementation plan, which translates into 54%, but we hope we'll do better for this year. The next target was the 4 reports on the development of legislation as approved by the legislative program. The 4 reports on this development of legislation as approved was our target, and the 4 legislative program legislations are the Consumer Protection Bill. This bill, we were successful in being tabled by the Minister in Parliament, the former Minister in Parliament, after Cabinet approval. And the bill seeks to address the economic transformation of the industry through the introduction of the provision relating to the warranty fund surplus, which may be utilized towards the development program for home building industry. The bill also seeks to address and create an enabling environment for new entrants into the home building industry through the introduction of the contractual provisions that ensure that there's sustainability in this market. The next bill is the Human Settlements Development Bill. This bill was approved by FOSAD and the Cabinet Committee, and now we are waiting to make it serve before Cabinet. The Human Settlement Development Bank aims to address the current market failures evident in both the supply and the demand aspects, and including that of the affordable housing value chain. The bill will be a catalyst in the private sector to increase the provision of funding to the intermediaries and the developers operating in the affordable housing space. These are the 2, and I'm going to read the next 2 if the slide can be kindly moved forward. Thank you. So I only read two bills and I didn't get the correct screen. Anyway, in the essence of time, I'll move to the Integrated Human Settlements Planning and Development Program. The target year was the 19
DDG?
Integrated...
DDG?
Yes, yes.
To allow program heads to lead on their areas as well.
Yes. So this program can be continued by my colleague, the DDG responsible for it. Thank you, Minister, and thank you, Portfolio Committee.
Afternoon, Chair, afternoon, Minister, DM, members of the committee, colleagues. My name is Neville Cheney. I'm the program head for the Integrated Human Settlements Planning and Development, the branch head for research, policies, strategy, and planning. Chair, I'll just put on my so that everyone is aware that who I am. Thank you. Chair, Minister, just to indicate the are we on slide 16? In relation to this target that is on the slide covers the priority development areas. The portfolio committee will remember that what we have done in order to ensure that we redress the spatial disintegration and improve the integration and spatial equity. We have gazetted through the Minister's Office 136 priority development areas, and in respect of each of those areas, we are then putting together integrated implementation programs to ensure that there is traction in relation to the work that's done in those areas. You'll see that on the slide, Chair, members, gives you an indication of which are those areas that we covered with specific relationship to the provinces. So Gauteng and Limpopo, you'll see Mpumalanga, those areas, northwest, and then there's a number of other areas. Chair, just to indicate what we did was that you'll see that we undertook seven where we took them from new, and then there were 12 that were reviewed based on provincial so that we maximized the use of funding that we had. Next slide, please, Paul. That's slide 17. Chair, as per the committee will be aware, one of the things that we have done as the department is redress the issue around poor performance, particularly in relation to what gets put into the business plans. What we have got is Project Readiness Matrix Program. We manage in 9 of the provinces, and that gives an indication of the Project Readiness Matrix that we've undertaken for the 21-22. So this will be in relation to the projects that I think the committee will receive some of those presentations and updates on that as part of the HSDG together, USDG and the informal settlements upgrading. That just gives you an indication of for the current year which are projects under planning, projects which are under implementation, and then projects under stages of procurement. Next slide, please, Paul. Chair, then on slide 18, you'll know that what one of the things that we undertake, one of the things that we are addressing is revitalization of distressed mining communities program, and that's managed in 6 provinces. Chair, that gives you an indication of the provinces where we are implementing the 6 provinces, and then also the ring-fence budget allocation. Chair, that's specifically to deal with some of the bulk-related constraints in those areas, and some of them as a result of some of the mines closing down is also resulting in some of that infrastructure degradation. The next slide, that's on slide 19. Chair, just to indicate, this slide covers 2 targets, and those targets specifically in relation to the matter of title deeds, that's the pre-post 94, the post 2014, and then the new title deeds. Chair, I'm not going to belabor this point. Mr. Leshavane will cover some of these points, but this is not a program or this is not a target that we are happy and we can with confidence say that we're doing well. You'll see that we just indicated that at the end of the financial year, it will be discontinued. The HSDG must then be used to fund the title deeds restoration, and the provinces will require to provide capacity. One of the things that we have done, Chair, is together with the Presidency under the Vulindlela program to look at fast-tracking this so that we get some traction, because we just haven't done what we were supposed to given the constraints that we have. Then on slide 20, just in relation to the verification of reported delivery, this is one of the issues that we have to be able to deal with in relation to the title deeds, because one of the things that the Auditor General found that is that reported figures were not consistent with what was reported or in the provinces. And you'll see, Chair, that what we do as the department is we verify each and every title deed on the basis of information and data that we extract in various forms. Slide 21 relates to the PHPs and Zeleni policy. One of the points that we undertake as the department is advocacy and ensuring that the provinces together with the municipalities implement the program, because one of the things that we undertake, or one of the things that we've observed as a department, and it's been a ministerial directive together with yourselves, is that we've got to be able to ensure that provinces do undertake PHP, because there's an aversion to it for various reasons, but it's one of those issues that one of those programs which we undertake policy advocacy to ensure that there's implementation. Chair, also on this slide, you'll see that we've got matters related to research, because within the program there is research that's undertaken, and then part of what was in the target was a research report, and that research report specifically focused on Shlanu and agri-villages, particularly in relation to the use of sustainable rain harvesting, as well as grey water reuse in agri-village housing projects, which was an issue that we were requested to attend to. The Shlanu matter is particularly in relation to those households that did not receive their title deeds as a result of the closing down of Servcon together with the other banking programs that ran until 1997. This is a matter that's receiving attention. So you can keep it there. Thanks, Paul. Slide 20 just gives an indication of the evaluation studies as well as the projects that we implemented. Slide 23 is also refers to the compliance in relation to the tabling of prescripts, with particular reference to annual performance plan, annual reports, compliance annual reports, appointment of boards, and then also a target in relation to the grant frameworks, because that's an issue that goes through yourselves, through the Minister, to the Minister of Finance, and that gets approved as part of DORA so that we comply with that. Slide 24, slide 24 just gives an indication of the quarterly performance assessments that we undertake in relation to the human settlements grants. That's the HSDG, USDG, TRG. In relation to this, one of the points that I just need to refer to on this slide is the principle of following the money. I don't think we've achieved what we have to, but there is a substantial amount of work that's been done to ensure that the money that gets spent, allocated by provinces, approved by minister, transferred by the DG, spent by the provinces, that we can account for it, and that the financial performance is consistent with the non-financial performance, and that's what these quarterly performance assessments do. Slide 25 is particularly in relation to the sector capacity program. And as alluded to by Minister, it's one of those issues that although we've undertaken a capacity or we've developed a capacity program, a sector capacity program, the issue is whether or not it's hitting the tar in terms of the provinces and municipalities. So one of the things that we just need to indicate is that in the metropolitan municipalities and the entity, these assessments were deferred. So we've completed the provincial ones, and that will be used to review and implement and support some of the capacity improvements in the provinces. Then also on this is the partnering compacts. I won't go into that. I'm going to try and rush through some of this. Then there's the upgrading. Chair Minister, this is Dr. Sokopo. Thanks. Slide 26.
Good afternoon, Minister. I'm just opening up my video so that the members can see me. Good afternoon, Minister, Deputy Minister, the members of the Portfolio Committee, and colleagues. I'm going to stop my video and then continue with the presentation of Informal Settlements Upgrading Program. I am Zwaleka Sokopo. I'm the Acting DDG for Informal Settlements Upgrading Program. We had six targets in the last financial year. The first target is about upgrading of informal settlements, that making sure that it's managed by all nine provinces and supporting the management of the upgrading of informal settlements. Our performance was partially achieved because we were unable to do all the oversight visits due to COVID-19 that we wanted to undertake, particularly the first quarter. And also the quarterly forums that we usually do were affected, particularly in the first quarter, of wanting to know what's the progress, what are the issues that are emerging, and where can we assess in terms of performance of provinces. The next target was about assisting. This is assisting now provinces and as well as the municipalities in assessing various informal settlements and determining whether they can be upgraded in situ or they should be relocated or partly in situ or partly relocated. The target was 100 informal settlements that will be assessed, and we overperformed there, and we have assessed 115 informal settlements. And this target unlocks now the upgrading process, because before a budget is allocated, then we need to first assess the informal settlements to determine whether we upgrade in situ or we relocate, so that then we can be able to purchase land. The next target was on research report on informal settlements upgrading that has to be upgraded.
I request that we mute our mic. Please proceed, ma'am.
Thank you very much. The research report, research on informal settlements was drafted, and it also directed us to that even if the land is suitable, sometimes we should not upgrade informal settlements unless it is on well-located land. It also indicated that then it's important to deal with security of tenure so that then we ensure that people have access to land, and therefore the incremental upgrading was highlighted in the report. The next target was on ensuring that 100% of the projects that were on the ground are monitored. And remember that the human settlements, the informal settlements development, settlements upgrading program last year was part of the the HSDG and USDG, which is the Human Settlements Development Grant, as well as Urban Settlements Development Grant. So we managed 75%, as indicated that COVID did affect us negatively in terms of on-site visits that we normally do to make sure that the reports that we are receiving, are they actually realized on the ground or not. The next target, and the next slide, please, slide number 27, was also conducting evaluation. That would so what we have done. This target is also not was not conducted. What we have done thus far is to ensure that then a literature review was done and an inception report. So there was some start of that evaluation and was not concluded, and we are hoping that that will then be concluded in the current financial year. And it's important because then that would also be part of the input of 2019-2024 MTSF. And the last target, chairperson, is on ensuring that there is capacity for informal settlements upgrading. This target was achieved because it was not necessarily only the capacity with regard to informal settlements, but all the programs. Is there capacity for the implementation of a different human settlements program? And the performance is that human settlement sector capacity program was developed, and the explanation that is out there, I'm not going to go into detail, but we do now have a capacity development program that indicates that in order for us to implement our various program, this is the type of capacity that we need at a implementation level. With that, Chairperson, thank you very much. I will hand over to my colleague that will be dealing with rental and social housing program.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, members of the Portfolio Committee, Minister and Deputy Minister. My name is Joseph Leshabani. I serve as the Deputy Director General responsible for affordable housing and rental housing in the department. Chairperson, in this program, one of the targets was to manage this rental and social housing program in 9 provinces. Chair, this target was partially achieved in quarter 3, 2, 3, and 4. We were undercut in this performance in quarter 1 simply because of the restrictions at the time. Similarly, the target on community residential units, members would recall this is the program through which provinces can redevelop public sector hostels or even build new rental units in this instance. Again, the monitoring and the verification of projects in this component could only be achieved partially in quarter 2, 3, and 4. Quarter 1 was undercut, as I indicated, due to restrictions at the time. We also sought to refine the policy framework in this instance. That work was undertaken by the policy branch. Further to that, Chair, all the projects that were under implementation were monitored by ourselves. We inspected those projects, verified and attended to those site issues. Similarly, Chair, the evaluation study in this regard about on rental housing tribunals was not concluded, Chair. It was only initiated. It will be concluded in this financial year. Similarly, Chair, the compliance that is in respect of those entities that are active in this program, in this case, the Social Housing Regulatory Authority, the compliance was achieved 100%. In the same way, Chair, the development of the sector capacity to implement these programs was put in place. Next slide, please. The next slide, Chairperson, takes us to the affordable housing component of the branch. In this instance, Chair, we had a target to undertake research on certain aspects of affordable housing. That research was undertaken and it related to the transactional support that is available in provinces and municipalities. Further to that, Chair, the next target was to undertake an evaluation study in respect of the finance-linked individual subsidy program. In as much as the evaluation study was only initiated at the time, it has since been concluded only in this financial year, Chair. The target on the statutory compliance, again, this is in relation to the entities that are active in this program, the NHFC in particular. Their compliance was achieved to the full extent. Chair, we also undertake quarterly performance assessments for the finance-linked individual subsidy program. These were done fully as targeted. Similarly, the capacity development program was put in place in respect of the program. Next slide, please. The next two slides, Chair, we take you into confidence about the performance of the disbursements of the FLISP subsidy, the finance-linked individual subsidy. This subsidy, Chair, in a nutshell, assists those households that want to buy houses. They then, those that qualify, they get this subsidy as a top-up. It helps reduce the capital of the loan that they are accessing from financial institutions. You will see, Chairperson, that in total, 2,350 subsidies were awarded in this instance, spread across the provinces as indicated. Just so that members are not left wondering why we're reporting on quarter four of the last financial year. Chair, that's simply because the audited figures for the quarter are only available after the audit, our own audit is closed. Therefore, we take the last quarter of the last financial year and then to the third quarter in this financial year. Next slide. Lastly, Chair, you will see now, insofar as the NHFC performance is concerned, we are sharing with the committee how many applications were received by the NHFC, which is the National Implementing Agent for this subsidy program, and the numbers that of subsidies that they've approved. That means the letter of grant were issued, and therefore the total value of those subsidies relating to just over 10-week amount. That means how much does the collective of beneficiaries access in loans from financial institutions? That's just over R1 billion assisted by just a not all transactions go through at the same time. Then there are pending disbursements you will see at the close of the financial year in that regard. Thank you very much, Chair. That concludes the performance of the program Affordable Housing and Rental Housing. Thank you very much. The next section relates to finance, which the CFO will deal with. Thank you so much.
CFO?
Thank you very much, Minister. I've tried to share my video, but I can see that it doesn't work for me this side. But nonetheless, my name is Funani Matlatsi. I am the CFO at the National Department. I do want to register my acknowledgement of Minister and good afternoon to herself and the Deputy Minister, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. I will take the members through the finances as they support or they fund the programs as indicated by my colleagues earlier on, including the Director General. I report on the expenditure that on the budget that Minister indicated earlier as being affected by the drastic cut
then as far as the economy is concerned, and relative also to the pandemic that hit the country in the previous financial year, that led us to have an adjusted allocation of 29 billion. Now, of that 29 billion, I want to indicate and re-emphasize that it is informed by, and rather the expenditure is informed by the transfers that, and I see
we have slides. Lost the slides.
I can see that, Chairperson, thank you. I'll just wait for Mr. Paul. Thank you very much. It's informed by the transfers that are made to the sector itself that will include the provinces as well as our metros. Now, if you look at that, it does give you a classification of what the Director General indicated earlier in terms of the programs, and of which we report to National Treasury, including the structures that are being approved even by Parliament itself. We have five programs under the department, and the first one, as indicated earlier on, administration and runs up until the one that is affordable housing, with the budget of the 29 being split against, and in terms of the budget structure as well, the budget is split within the programs and the grant itself to support the objective-based budgeting of the department. So you will see funds running across the structure itself, not in one integrated human settlements planning and development. However, as we move to the expenditure, I did indicate that it is highly informed by the transfers, and if you can see from Program 2, the 26 billion was already transferred, and under rental and housing, there's an element of 1 billion that has already been transferred, and relative to rental and social housing. Now, that constitutes the 28.7 billion that forms part of the transfers, including the departmental expenditure from an operational point of view. Now, we had to expedite that amount and spend it together with our provinces, and I think as we move to just to the next slide, not before then, we will indicate how provinces have fared against the transfers that we have made. So we were only left from an operational point of view with an amount of 303 million under expenditure. So we spend the entire amount, but as I indicated, again, it's informed by the transfers, and that doesn't mean that the whole amount was expended by the provinces. Now, the below slide does indicate the economic classification wherein the interest lies on exactly what is it that the operational budget spent, it is spent on. And we do show you the compensation of employing to the value of 397, and as a department, we paid it to the tune of 352. So that was 89% in as far as the structure that is filled has been concerned. Now, if you look at the goods and services, Chairperson, and members of the Portfolio Committee, Minister and Deputy Minister, we are showing a very reduced allocation, a very reduced expenditure from the previous years. Normally, during this time of the year, we would be reporting close to 93% of our performance in as far as expenditure is concerned. However, it was affected by the issue of the definite hard lockdown, which hit most of the items that are relative to the expenditure, and that had money invested on them. And I must indicate that if you look at the goods and services part of it, it does include the issues of the consultants, which we did have in the department in the form of the professional resource teams. But I must also indicate that this was also informed by most of the normal running costs that we have as a department, your likes of the property payments, office accommodation, and those are standard contracts that we have. The hiring of the copies are standard items that we have, and then partly part of the computer equipment that have been purchased as well that will form part of the expenditure as well relative to that. But now the impact was also very hard because most of the staff was not even traveling, and members would also recall that the goods and services is linked to an individual person in terms of the budget, and when we budget for a COE, the goods and services also follows that, in contrary to when one sees it to be, say, it's a normal expenditure or it's a normal allocation to the department. It is basically linked to the number of people in the department. So given the fact that there was not much traveling in the department, the travel and assistance was highly affected, and we did not spend much. But then as the year progressed and as the lockdowns were regressed, we moved towards the least level two, the expenditure started to be moving. And I think DG did indicate that the performances, even the business plan, was picking up at its peak, whereby we managed to see some of the outputs being achieved towards the end of the financial year. So basically, we are indicating that we wouldn't have been at 68 if it was not of the issues that we experienced in the previous financial year. Some of the items are of a departmental nature, where you see your payment of financial assets being at 90%. And I think this is where most of the debt that has been written off by the department is approved by the Loss Control Committee. And that payment was made to the tune of 90%. The transfers and subsidies, obviously, talks to those grants and the subsidies that are given to HDA entities, SHRA received, as well as the NHFC money, is also embedded within the 28.2 billion. Then the lastly is the issue of the capital assets, which forms part of those computer equipment that we purchase. So this is basically what informs the expenditure of the department with those economic items and sub-items that contribute to us having an economic item or economic justification leading to the 99%. Now, I did speak to the operational budget. As a matter of fact, now it is programmed, and we are separating it from the bigger part of the grant just so that everybody sees how we had performed as a department, and that's the 78% that was shown earlier on in terms of the operations. So we did not spend the 100%, and as it did indicate that if you look at the goods and services, it's at 68%, and it's also informed by the activity. Because simply because the procurement plan was also affected, it could not be implemented fully, and that also affected the APP of the department, which we only had to do it just towards the end of the financial year. And with the figures that have been shown as a 55% APP achieved, it's relative to the 78% of the budget. We can move beyond the slide because it's very clear for everybody. Thank you, Paul. Now, this is where we're saying the transfers have been effected. Now, if I look at this, and it's very clear to everybody, these are the grants that we were having and administering in the previous financial year. The issue of the title deed was taken care of by the earlier presentation. Similarly, we are still sitting with the provincial and municipal grants that are still running this financial year, and everybody is quite aware. We did indicate and advocate in the past that grant of the title deed was going to it was moving towards the end of it, so it stopped by the end of March 2021. So this would be the final report of the title deed. However, as we have moved towards the year, that money is embedded within the HSDG, provinces and metros are expected to utilize and not stop the program of the title deed restoration because simply there's no specified or dedicated grant to it. Now, the entities that I spoke of that form part of the 28 billion that I spoke of, we have transferred monies to SHRA as we see them, and then the CISOs, Community Scheme Ombud Services, is receiving 47 million. There is that social relief grant that I know there will be a discussion around the social relief grant that has been transferred to SHRA as well as the NHFC. It is reflected that that's the money that we took away from the reduced allocations from the grant in the previous financial year. And then we had to fund the social relief grant and administered also by SHRA as well as the NHFC. And then HDA, as part of our agency, received 253. Then we have the list that Mr. Leshabani spoke of. And in terms of the NHFC figures, it is very clear the capital budget was transferred to NHFC at the tune of 384, and then subsequently there is that amount that is supporting it at an operational part of it, which is a FISP support of 15.4 million that has already been transferred. So all the transfers have been made, and then we'll get to the claims against the state, which is standard transfers that the department does because of the commitment that we have, the service level agreements, the memorandum of understanding that we have with the Cities Alliance, as well as the UN Habitat, and those were affected during the course of the financial year. And that takes the control of everything that is transferred to the tune of 100%. Now, as I indicated, that those transfers, we can move, Minister Paul, those transfers that I'm, the very same transfers that I'm from should constitute what we are presenting here. Chairperson, we are giving the portfolio committee members a snapshot, more or less, of what the annual report fully explained and to the public as well. So we've just given you to say, with the reduced budget from 16.6 billion of the HSDG, we were left with 14.8. And then within that budget, we had some rollovers that come from 2019-20 financial year that were allocated to Eastern Cape, Gauteng, as well as the Northwest. If you take the 375 against the 14, or together with the 14, you get a total budget that we are reporting to, or we have reported to as audited, at 15.3 billion. Now, of that amount, all provinces reported an expenditure of 14.7 billion. But as you can see, we had a number of unspent funds. We had challenges in as far as the performance, given the fact that most of the work had to stop during the year and they had to pick up during the midterm review. And at that time, the recovery plans were not convincing. And subsequently, we realized that some of the monies would not be able to have been expended as a matter of fact. Then during the year, as I indicated during the midterm review, we've realized that the likes of your Eastern Cape, Limpopo, and Northwest, as well as the Free State, were likely not to spend their allocation, and they were party to the process of us stopping and reallocating money from them to the provinces that at that point were eligible to can absorb the money. We have taken away 338 Eastern Cape, 100 Free State. We took 50 from Limpopo and we closed off by 100 from the Northwest. So in total, that amount led to 588, which was spread to those provinces, which Gauteng was given 100 million, and that 100 million that was given to Gauteng was specific for the areas in the crisis that is in the Mid-Valley. And we gave 200 to Northern Cape, as well as the Mpumalanga received 138, and finally the Western Cape province got 150. And as we were moving along, obviously it changed the position of the allocation that was given to the provinces from to and again to fro. Now that 526 remained unspent by the 31st of March, and this is the money that as we would be presenting again this financial year with the quarter four, the members will be in a position to can see how the rollover fared within the current financial year because of the unspent funds within the provinces that we have. And if members can also see, we took 338 from Eastern Cape, and Eastern Cape was not doing very well. The position has changed this year. So that 278 of that, we can simply safely say for now, 270 of it, which was a upgrading of informal settlements grant, which could not be spent and was embedded within the HSDG. That money has been approved as a rollover this year. But like I said, that information will come forth in the current financial year's report, as we shall be reporting back to the portfolio. That bottom part does indicate that we are assisted, if not provinces, we should accept that they have the relationship and memorandum of understanding, the service level agreements, that they use other organs of state to scale up on their service delivery. So there are funds that are being transferred directly by the provinces to the agencies, and we do note that the Gauteng has number of entities, if not institutions, where the same HSDG is being transferred to. We are giving you the HDA municipalities, they work with them, Gauteng Partnership Fund, the Rand Water at the same time. Now, if we look at the total that Gauteng has transferred, it amounts to 2.1 billion. Now, that amount does not constitute, or simply saying, reflects the expenditure from the provinces, because there is no outcome that has been achieved relative to the 2.1 from the HDA. And we've accepted that we do have issues with HDA. We are dealing with them, and Minister is quite aware of such issues. And we will be giving a different scenario in this financial year after we have actually put our turnaround or a recovery for HDA, as a matter of fact. And Minister did indicate the issues of the board and the stability that the department is putting towards our entities. Similarly, KZN, or rather Limpopo, is using the HDA, and Northwest is also transferring funds to Matosane. We are managing these funds, Honorable Chair, simply because we want to see if the very same money do relate to the outcomes that are placed against the MTSF or the business plan itself. So this is just being transparent to say there are funds that are sitting there and we are taking care of them. Similarly with the USDG, Chair, I think the emphasis that we're putting here is that the figures that we see here are three quarters figures, because by the time we close the year, which is 31st March, the year of the municipalities has not ended yet. So it would end in June. So because of the fact that we are closing the year and we need to secure the funds, we need to transfer all the funds just so that the metro itself from the 1st of April is able to utilize them, we will show the 100% of expenditure, but the figures that are here are as 31st March 2021, as well as the performance against the departments which are receiving the funds to the tune of 11.6 billion. Now, the 11.6 billion also is informed by the approved rollover from the 2019-20 financial year at 1 billion. And adding to 10 billion, then we are reporting, we've reported even in the annual approved and audited figures of 11.6 billion. Now, of that amount, by that date, we had an expenditure of only 5.9 billion within provinces and within metros. And I think the principle that we can also flag here is that the metros have a tendency of a hockey stick approach and mostly spending their money towards the end of the financial towards the end of their financial year, which is the third quarter, or our fourth quarter, so to say. Now, the results mostly appear in August after they have paid all the invoices using the accrual system, which is one advantage that they have. So we are more likely to see the whole part of the expenditure of the USDG being expended by metros because they have a leeway and time after the adjustment budget, which is mostly January. And then they're able to juggle around within the funds. So most of it will be realized in the quarter that we shall be presenting and for summing up to the monies that we have received. So that 5.9 billion that was expended tends to be different when we shall be presenting the final figures. So that more ordinarily that 5.7 would have been expended. So I wouldn't want to speak out of 10 because I would want members to see exactly how the 5.7, which appears as red in our picture, would have been fed by the time we give the results. Similarly, with the consolidated fund utilization down there, it does indicate that of those unspent funds, the future of them lies within the 5 months that was taken care of from the 1st of April to the middle of August after they have paid, had paid their final invoice. I think the last two slides are talking to the Auditor General's report, Mr. Paul, and then I will conclude on them. Can I ask you to move to the next slide? All right, we can move this one because it's known. I think the AG did present this one to the Portfolio Committee earlier on. The DG did indicate, and I think in most of our slides we do indicate that the department had an unqualified audit opinion. But I must say that, Chair, we are striving towards a clean audit, if not an audit opinion with no matter of emphasis. However, we have been struggling over the past years with some of the indicators that are found to be one thing, and I did earlier on, we did indicate that there was issues of reliability and usefulness of the information that was provided. So we were found wanting on the two areas that are of significant nature, which is the ones that are highlighted in blue. The ones that are from the information technology, as well as the rest, was taken out of because we were at the amber at that time. So we managed to improve on our IT, but we can still do better than what we have given the AG, and that's what DDG Cholonyana earlier on indicated, and then the final one, which I'm talking about currently, that made us to not to achieve the clean audit, it's those four bullets that are moving towards the quality of submitted financial information from Program 2 that was selected for audit. So we are dealing with this, and I think as the information is very clear without me repeating what the AG has repeated, I think I can move to the next slide and indicate some of the mitigating factors that we are putting in place to can salvage the situation and move beyond the areas. So we have indicated again that the alignment of the APP is very important between the department as well as the national department, the sector across the Chairperson, simply because what we've picked up is that the APP that is signed off at the provincial departments or at the provincial level tends to be far different from the APP that we signed, but we are actually moving towards the same targets or achieving the same target. Now we have gone through this beyond the discussion of us having customized indicators, and that discussion has unfolded. DPME is also involved. So we are taking care of that as well during this year, and from the part of the planning as well. And I think it's very important to indicate that the reporting is made to ensure the timers achievement of the ATS targets as well as the APP that is set. And I think that one is pretty standard, because as I indicated, if you look at the targets that we have and the APP that we have, they don't talk to each other, and then we find ourselves having a clash when it comes to the targets that are reporting. And then we are also talking about our improved collaborations that we have and ensure availability of the sector performance across the those brands that are affected as well, the issues between COCTA, the DIT office, and those that have an impact, particularly, especially on the issue of the rural development and agriculture, because it does impact on the approvals of certain processes as well. Now, when we look at the efficiency of the systems as well, we were found wanting with some of the invoices that we had in the previous financial year simply because of the audit, but we have given ourselves a turnaround time to can respond to some of the parliamentary questions and respond to the Treasury's PFMA in 2 weeks' time. Chairperson, I think from the AG perspective, we've also put an action plan of which managers are taking responsibility of all those issues that the AG had raised, and then we should be in a position to report differently using the current financial scenario. Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you, Minister. Thank you, Deputy Minister.
Minister?
Thank you very much, Chair. We'll take, I think we are done. I don't know if DG is back. Is there something he wants to wrap up on, and then we can take questions, or we can just allow members and all of us will respond afterwards. So that brings us to the end of our presentation, Chair.
I am back, Minister. I think the CFO has covered everything. We're ready to take comments and questions. My network is stable now.
Okay, thank you very much, DG.
Thank you very much, Minister and the DG. Invite honorable members to interact with the presentation. My network is not stable now, and if I'm not audible, members should indicate that. Can I see the hands, members? Let's start with Honorable Mokgotho. Honorable Mokgotho.
Thank you, Chairperson. According to the AG's report, the entity of HDA incurred irregular expenditure in 2019 to 2020 financial year. They incurred an irregular expenditure of 50 million in that financial year. And then during this financial year of 2020 to 2021, they incurred an irregular expenditure of 15 million. So what I want to know is, when we go back to the financial year of 2019 to 2020, has the department dealt with this issue or this matter effectively? Was there any consequence management applied to all the officials who were responsible for this loss of 50 million? And again, during this financial year, is there any consequence management that is applied with regard to irregular expenditure of 15 million incurred by the officials of HDA? And then again, in the financial year 2019 to 2020, a fruitless expenditure of 14.5 million was incurred by HDA. What I would like to know is, how far is the process of consequence management with regards to this matter, with regards to HDA, if at all there is any consequence management, you know, that has been applied, or it is then now that the department decided, you know, to deal with this matter effectively. And then again, there is also, I beg your pardon, let me move to another question. According to the AG's report, EAAB has received unqualified audit opinion with findings on compliance. What measures has the department put in place to deal with this effectively? Are there any consequence management applied with regard to this matter? And then, achievement of houses in 9 provinces delivered through the PHP or Zenzele policy was reported in the annual report, but the supporting evidence provided to AG differed materially from the reported achievement. Why did the supporting evidence provided to the AG differ materially from the reported achievement? Why did the department mislead the Auditor General with this regard? The next one, after the Auditor General identified the material misstatements in the reported performance information of Program 2, the department subsequently corrected only some of the misstatements. Why did they choose just select some? Why didn't they correct every misstatement? Or was there something that the department was hiding? The AG has raised concern about, the AG has raised concern both during the 2019 to 2020 financial year and 2020 to 2021 annual report about internal control. How is the, about the internal control deficiencies in the department? How is the department responding to ensure that internal control deficiencies are addressed and oversight over performance is improved? What are the reasons for the incomplete records to verify the reported achievement of the target of 100% of the projects under implementation monitored with regard to HSDG, USDG, and TRG? What are the reasons for the late appointment of the service provider for the UISP evaluation study? What is the current status of the Human Settlement Department Bank? The following questions are directed to the minister. Ministers, if we go to the Ruth Mompati region in Naledi sub-region, what in a place called Stella in Ward 1, if you can go there now as I'm speaking with you, you'll find that there is a municipal building which was built for the purpose of accommodating the municipal staff since 2016. That building is empty, is a wild elephant. Instead, the municipality or the municipal staff or officials are using the community hall as their offices, and the community do not have, you know, a place to engage in their communal activities. And then again, if you go to Greater Taung, if you go to Ward 20, Ward 14, Ward 18, and Ward 8, you will find that in Ward 18, there are RDP houses that were built before 2016. And also in Ward 14, RDP houses that were built before 2016. If you go to Ward 20 again, RDP houses that were built there. But still today, those RDP houses are unoccupied and they are now vandalized, you know, by people. But they are beneficiaries who are supposed to have occupied those houses. That is what we call a fruitless expenditure. Tax monies have been wasted while our poor people in Greater Taung who are needy, who do not have the means to build themselves houses, are suffering. And all these communities, you know, of these wards have went to the municipality to report this, to complain, but, you know, all their pleas and complaints are falling on deaf ears. Minister, when are you going to ensure that the proper beneficiaries of these RDP houses occupy their houses? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mokgoto, Honorable Powell.
Thanks, Chair. Firstly, I'd like to welcome the new minister and also welcome the immediate action that she seems to have taken to begin stabilizing and cleaning up the boards of our critical entities, many of which this committee will know have been used as vehicles of patronage and have suffered from extensive political interference in recent years. I would also like to ask the Minister if she can spend some time at the end of this meeting speaking to some of the more specific interventions that she's undertaken to stabilise the HDA and the EAAB, both of which we know have got significant leadership, internal audit and legal challenges. And then possibly at the same time, just on the EAAB, if the Minister could let us know where things are with the Property Practitioners Board and when that act is likely to be enacted. I think as MPs, quite a lot of us get a number of questions on that. So if she's able to give this committee, take this committee into her confidences and even give us a projected timeline, that would be great. Further, Minister, I'd like to just bring to your attention while you're in the committee that the audit report of this annual report, as with last year, notes that there's been a general lack of consequence management for financial and material irregularity. The audit report has also noted that some of the investigations that were supposed to have been enacted in the previous financial year were not performed, and that adequate disciplinary actions were not taken against staff who had caused irregular, fruitless, and wasteful expenditure. Now, my understanding is that what this really means is that corrupt officials have been protected in places, and that despite guarantees, no action has been taken in certain entities yet. And this is despite the CEO of various entities, as well as previous leadership, having provided this committee with guarantees that punitive action would be taken and that we as a committee could be guaranteed of consequence management. So, Minister, can you please give us some, I know you're new, but if you can, what specific steps you have taken and that the Director General is taking, and that that CEOs will have to take to ensure that consequence management is implemented at our entities. I note that in this, the DHS annual report, there has not been significant fruitless and wasteful expenditure. And whilst it's not a clean audit, well done on the unqualified audit opinion. The results are another story altogether. Then lastly, Minister, in Limpopo, the SIU shared their findings and remedial action with the previous minister and departmental management, but no further action has been taken against those who've been implicated, according to the audit report that we received this morning. Why not, and what recommendations should this committee make in that regard? I know that it's not your job to make recommendations for this committee, but we asked the Auditor General, and we'll ask you as the Minister, does this committee need to call a special hearing with those implicated? We are allowed to summons any individuals, but what are you as the Minister doing to make sure that remedial action is taken in respect of SIU reports? Then secondly, I'd like to just quickly address the Portfolio Committee Chairperson, specifically in regards to the recommendations of this committee in respect of the previous annual and audit reports. We as a committee noted this morning that one of the key recommendations of the AG this year in respect of the annual report, as with previous years, has been for the committee to monitor and to regularly follow up with the executive authority and the accounting officers on progress against audit action plans that have been put in place to ensure improved audit outcomes, and that the key recommendation has been for this committee to follow up with entities that occur fruitless and wasteful expenditure. And Chairperson, as I stated this morning, and we had a brief discussion before the committee was adjourned that wasn't fully concluded, you'll recall that over the past 2 years, myself and a number of members have sent dozens of official requests asking that follow-ups can be conducted by this committee. And sadly, none of this has been acknowledged or has happened. And as a result, where we stand now with the HDA coming before this committee on Friday, we have failed in our undertaking as a committee to call the HDA before us for a progress report on the implementation of their audit action plan that was supposed to happen before the next annual audit was tabled. And what that makes us as a committee is derelict in our duties, because that was a formal recommendation that was tabled before Parliament. And that cannot happen again. We have got oversight obligations and powers to summon any individual at any time in this committee, and we've simply got to find the time to do this. We've also not yet received the finalised NHBRC or the SIU reports for various COVID-19 TRU projects, including Duncan Village and Talana insofar as SIU. So, Chairperson, when you come to your speaking time, can you please indicate why these reports have not yet served before the committee despite being finalised months ago? And can you inform us when the committee can expect to receive these reports so that we can make formal recommendations to Parliament? As discussed earlier, this committee obviously can't sit during plenary sessions, but we can find additional time in the evenings or even on the weekends. This committee has sat on a Sunday before, and I'm sure that in the interests of the 60 million people of our nation, we would all be willing to give up a Sunday afternoon for important business like this. So, yeah, going forward, if we're going to perform our duties as parliamentarians properly, we're going to, as a committee, have to ensure that we frequently and regularly invite entities and the department to account to us, and that's obviously outside of the statutory requirements such as quarterly reports. I'll try and be quick. My questions to the department are as follows. Director General, by October this year, and I know that you're the DG and that this is a question for the responsible entity, but I know that the department had oversight over this. By October last month, the Residential Rental Relief Fund had still not disbursed a single cent. Not one rand had been disbursed, and only 54 applications had been approved. And at the time last year when we sat before all of you, this intervention had been heralded as a key departmental intervention in alleviating economic stress. And we know that the reason that this hasn't happened is because it's
recording
taken the
department a year
to analyze the policy. We know everything happens at a glacial pace in this country and things need to change. Why did it take so long? Can you just explain to us why it took so long, and what's being done to expedite further applications? I see the Shiraz just tweeted now, they're doing a bit of social media on it, but it's not people on Twitter who are applying for rental relief funds. It's people sitting in CRUs. Secondly, what tangible steps will the National Department be taking in clearly defining targets using smart indicators? We've seen from the audit report and the DPME report that there's a problem with some of the with quite a few of the indicators because they're not we can't measure them properly. So will the department and minister, I think it's something for you to take note of because it's a repeat finding in this department, is that we need better indicators, better KPIs. Then DG, I note that the highest percentage of the Human Settlements Development Grant invested into priority human settlements development areas was in the Western Cape, but nothing was achieved against this target in Limpopo and Mpumalanga and the Northern Cape. What is the department doing to rectify this underperformance, specifically in light of the PDAs, which were gazetted and approved and should be the priority? And that will also address apartheid spatial planning, you know, in big cities. Then with regards to the upgrading of the 1,500 informal settlement in settlements by 2024, the midterm target, there's been no shift from the baseline and zero, nothing has happened in terms of the 300 planned phase three settlements for this year. And again, this remains unchanged for the second year. What tangible support can the DHS provide to provinces to improve this? Or should this indicator be revised entirely, especially in line with the new grant? Mr. Cheney, one for you. In terms of the title deeds, we see, again, significant underperformance. And I think this committee is tired of talking about title deeds. I think everybody's tired of talking about title deeds because the situation just doesn't seem to be changing. And we're seeing desperate underperformance in all provinces with the exception of the Western Cape, Northwest and KZN, which spent their full grants this year. In places, Mr. Cheney, like the Eastern Cape, municipalities, and I know you're not responsible for municipalities, but you are responsible for fixing this. Municipalities have indicated that 26 years into democracy, they still don't have appropriate systems in place for the registration of title deeds. While, on the other hand, the Western Cape has now been able to roll out a smart electronic system, and they've delivered over 6,300 in the last financial year alone. But sadly, nationally, against over 90,000 service sites being delivered, only 3,400 people received deeds. Mr. Cheney, you admit that the department has not done what it needs to do given the constraints that it's faced, and that's very vague in terms of the way that you worded it, and I quote you there verbatim. What are these constraints, and how will these be remedied? We have the same conversation every year, but it's not changing. Perhaps we need to look at following what the Western Cape's done with the new smart system. I speak to the MEC, Mr. Simmers, frequently, and I know that now they're giving immediate title deeds when they build houses in that province. And can we maybe take a leaf out of that book? Can we look at implementing smart systems? What are we going to do to change it? Then the audit report stated, my colleague asked that question, Shirley asked that question. So then out of a target of 20% of land acquired falling within PDAs that needs to be rezoned, only 0.14% was met this year. And the slow pace, our colleague Michael, I don't remember his surname, he spoke about this at length this morning, but the slow pace of land reform is obviously compounded by the devastating economic state of South Africa. We've got a 63% youth unemployment rate. Our land invasions across the country are running rampant. And if land reform and metropolitan rezoning continues to track at less than a 1% achievement against targets, our country is going to fail. So what legislative or policy-based, and Director Mr. Changana, maybe you can answer this, or maybe your policy wizards can answer that. I think we need a legislative or a policy-based response. because this rezoning, and it would need to be done in coordination with COGTA, the pace of rezoning, something's got to change. And I know you're hamstrung as a department by inadequate, understaffed, you know, failed municipalities, but we need to take the leadership on this. Two last questions very quickly. The UISP grant was previously a component of two other grants and it's standalone, but we know that the evaluation study wasn't completed on time because of the late appointment of the service provider, and the performance of this program is really poor, half of the targets but 80% of the budget spent. Can the department explain the misalignment between the targets and the budget, or the targets met and the budget that was spent? Last question, DG for you, or maybe your finance person. My apologies, I haven't written down everybody's names. I'll make an effort to do that when they respond. But against an overall expenditure of 98%, we've only met 59% of targets. I know that the financials in the presentation did speak to this, but is there going to be any consequence management or remedial measures that are taken to recover irregular expenditure that's occurred in the gap between the expenditure and the performance? And then lastly, to all the members of this committee and to our chairperson, our previous meeting concluded without any of us actually having a robust deliberation on adopting the Auditor General and the DPME's recommendations, and that happened last year as well. We hear them, we speak to them, but then we don't deliberate as a committee. So I'd like to request, Chairperson, that this committee sets aside special time to discuss and deliberate recommendations. It probably won't be today, but that perhaps a special meeting can be called in the next week for us to thoroughly engage as colleagues working together to discuss our program of action as a committee and holding the department and its entities to account, because the way that we've done things hasn't worked. Things are getting worse in many of the entities. We're not holding the relevant officials to account properly, as we should be doing as a committee. And I think we can remedy this by just setting aside a little bit more time to meet and to deliberate. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honourable Tseki. Honourable Tseki, you follow Honourable Powell.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much. Chairperson, just a few points. I think, Chairperson, let's appreciate the opening remarks of the minister. Sometimes they normally say, when someone comes to a meeting and really raise those profound issues, they normally say fresh air, fresh air, without talking bad about the previous air. Chair, the minister has mentioned two things here. Okay, maybe before I mention what she has mentioned, maybe all of us, including Member Powell, we may come to Parliament for different reasons. But as the African National Congress, we are there to lead transformation and advance the interests of the masses. So in whatever we are doing, it needs to have an impact to the people that
thank you, we are losing you.
Yes, I could realize. Yeah. So I think we should at all times remind ourselves for that. In particular, parties like the DA, they should know our strategic intent and note it. Chair, the minister have raised two things which I thought, in my view, she has closed the meeting. One is about transparency in every activity that the department is involved in. Because there's nothing that is private there, Chair. We are there to serve the people of South Africa. And transparency is going to assist to win that. Secondly, it's about national data registration. Minister, I must say, every minister before, MECs before you, have been saying this thing. I don't know who's stopping them not to do it. So, Babu Changa, you must check if it's not people in your office that are stopping MECs and ministers to do this national register. That is transparency. When a person goes to the department, can easily see any department in South Africa, municipality, as long as it's got anything to do with human settlement, that person can be able to see the status or her status in that office. But the minister is saying, let's advance it because we are living in a fourth industrial revolution, that a person can check, like the IEC checks, have a number from time to time, people can be able to check where they are and trust that no one is going to jeopardize that system. The other one, okay, that's what those two important, I felt those are the two important things, which I thought the minister, if those things happen, we'll have a better department. And then there's something that is raised as well. It was also raised by Member Mkhot, which I agree with him. Minister, if you can check with your team how many houses are completed but still empty, and then what is happening in those houses. I've got a number of them in Gauteng. Even the stand, those that are allocated people, but in real, they are not allocated. They are being invaded, vandalized, and the like. So I think if the minister can make a follow-up on that one. And then on the side of human settlement, informal settlement, there's something called re-blocking, minister. If we can work with municipality and the province to fast-track this re-blocking, it assists on two things. Firstly, those that are able to build themselves houses, because they know that now this is my stand, they are able to build. And when the department comes to say, okay, we approved your house, now we can build stopped. For you. This person has already built his house. And therefore the department could save and move to the next one. So this re-blocking is very important so that people are ready, whether they are assisting themselves or it's actually, re-blocking is almost the same as, not almost, it's actually the same as a rapid land program. Because people currently in informal settlement, some are just staying in an informal way.
Recording in progress.
Informal or checks, but they would know that this is my stand and I can develop myself while waiting for government. Chair, I must say, those are the two or few points that I thought I should raise with the department. Thank you.
Honorable Buthelezi and followed by Honorable Khoni.
Thank you, Chairperson. We see that there's no change in the audit outcomes on compliance with legislation, meaning that there's a continuing disregard for legislation in the preparation of financial statements, expenditure management, consequence management, and procurement. And on procurement, this is very worrying because there's a potential for corruption when the relevant number of quotations are not obtained, and when there is no invitation for competitive bids. Material misstatements in the preparation of financial statements point to a problem of misrepresentation of information, if not outright lying. The question that I wish to ask is, in terms of its extended powers, what is the AG doing to enforce compliance with legislation? Second question, there's an increase in the total irregular expenditure, which is amounting to about 13 million rands. And there's also fruitless and wasteful expenditure amounting to 453,000 rands. This relates to the first question that identifies incorrect evaluation of bids and quotations. What is the AG intending to do about these findings? It does not appear that the people in the department are doing things that they don't understand. They know exactly what they are doing when incorrectly evaluating bids. They know what they are doing when they don't get the relevant number of quotations. What is the AG doing about this? We are already living under constrained finances in which every single cent counts. We need to know if there are consequences for such actions and what the AG will do in terms of its powers. Third question, there were reports in September 2021 that 15.3 million, that a 15.3 million government tender, rather, for the construction of Talen Hostel in Limpopo was fraudulently obtained. Did the AG look into these allegations? And if so, what were the findings? Have any of the funds been recovered, or are there any steps to recover the funds? Thank you, Chairperson.
Comrade, Honorable Koniso Pasimu, and then followed by Honorable Masuta.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, for the opportunity. My I put three or four items, I mean issues I want to raise. One, I'm going back to the title deed, which we always talk about and has been raised already this morning and earlier on before me, to say that Chairperson, like we agree that the title deed issue is not only a departmental issue. It is a multifaceted challenge, which I think the department needs to, as a matter of urgency, to make sure that they collaborate. I don't know how deep or how strong the collaboration is with other departments which are affected by this, including at a local level, because indeed, really, this is... It's frustrating, and people who are more frustrated are those who are not their issues are not redressed. So I would like to hear what the department has to say about that, because that was also raised by the DG, by the Auditor General, it was also raised by the Planning, Monitoring, and Evaluation Department. So that is it's more urgent, and I think. As a committee, we need to have a special meeting to come and discuss this matter and to make sure that the ball is rolling. Coming to the issue of the internal auditing is also a challenge or a problem because forever the findings which always come from the Auditor General, it tends to exactly that. There's no control, inadequate control in terms of compliance and even compliance with the procurement legislation. And it also says that the management did not implement adequate review and monitoring controls over preparation of financial statements and performance reporting. So that already is a problem. So the department needs to say what is it which is so difficult for them to make sure that they have good systems so that by the time that the AG comes around, then all systems are in place. Coming to what is also worrying is the restoration grant, which was not fully utilized. So I would like to know the reason why not. My last question, Chair, or two last questions would be on the program two, where integrated human settlement and development planning, a contributing factor listed for underspending in the housing subsidy system budget was the State Information Technology Agency, CETA, we all know, not providing the required services as per the service level agreement. This reason was also presented in the 2019 AR for understanding. Has the department engaged with CETA around this persistent challenge before? And if so, what was the outcome? Could the department also provide more information on the reasons for the late payment of employee and employer pension fund contribution? With that note, Chair, I want to commend the department also for their audit outcome. And I also want to welcome the new minister and welcome his opening speech, which was forthright and able to admit where their challenges are. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable Masuta, and followed by Honorable Sushwai.
Thank you, Chair. I think in the light of the earlier concerns,
recording stopped. Put
the mic as close to my mouth as possible, so I'll switch off the video. Just to also follow on colleagues who made complimentary observations on the minister's opening statement, to say that new as she is to the portfolio, just like some of us, is nevertheless showing the ability to hit the ground running and to pick up on the key salient areas and issues that are urgent and need some serious response. So hands up to the minister as well. Chairperson, earlier you would recall that I raised the question with the Auditor General where officials, whether of the department or one of the
entities, recording in progress,
claimed that or are claiming that one of the reasons for the finding, negative findings on procurement, was their failure to publish certain tender or tenders on the portal, which they have no control over. The Auditor General, you'll recall, I had an exchange with them, and they are flatly denying of ever making such a negative finding based on that issue in relation to procurement. So somebody somewhere missed the point, and it would be helpful that we get accurate information about what was and what wasn't the concerns that led to certain findings in particular. Chairperson, I think that there is a number of issues sticking with the interaction this morning with the Auditor General and DPME, which were raised, which are of such critical importance. And I assume that the department was not part of the meeting. And if so, I think it would be unfortunate if the department does not get the full report or recording of the interface that we had with the two entities, where they spoke about them, and in some instances, very critically, such as the issue of continued degeneration when it comes to consequence management and non-implementation of previous recommendations based on certain previous findings, etc. I think the department needs to hear that, and they need to come back to us and tell us their version and what their suggestion is to resolve those issues, you know. And if indeed there are any issues that the department has with unfair findings against them, by the AG. They have every right to complain even to this committee. We won't hesitate to call back the AG and ask the AG to clarify itself on those specific matters so that there is fairness at the end of the day. Chair, I raised the issue earlier this morning with the AG's office to say, when you evaluate the performance indicators that the department and entities set for themselves in the APPs, their relevance, etc. What informs that? Are departments and entities at liberty to pick and choose that which they consider to be significant enough? And to the extent that they can lower down their targets so that they are more attainable, even if their mandate goes far beyond the level of targeting that they have, that they may have established for themselves. And I specifically raise the issue that we have a framework in this country. First, there's a constitution, more generally, but also more specifically in terms of Chapter 2 of the Constitution, the aspect that specifically deals with socioeconomic rights. It sets out a minimum floor of rights that South Africans are entitled to. And this department is implicated there. Now, there is a number of judgments, whether you take Groot Boom or any of the other departments, of the other judgments, which clearly articulate.
I think that I'm done with my.
Can I request that you mute?
Well, the mission is not a fit, but I'm done with my.
Honorable Buthelezi. Honorable Buthelezi.
Recording stopped.
All right, can I proceed, Chair?
Proceed, Honorable Mashita.
Yes. Now, there is a series of constitutional and other court judgments which put together
recording in progress
a jurisprudence, a body of jurisprudence, which further clarifies the extent, the reach of some of these constitutional obligations articulated in the Constitution, their implications for government in general, be it jointly or severally at all three spheres, and the obligations, constitutional obligations that flow out of it. Now, the Department of Justice, when my predecessor, Minister Khadebe, was still minister, sought to collate some of these judgments since 96, I think until 22, I can't remember which year, and there was a minimal a reaction by government departments to that report. Maybe you should try and get that report from Justice, which is obviously already outdated now, and maybe look at further judgments after that report was compiled, and do a bit of reflection to say, how are we faring in delivering on the promises of the Constitution to our people? Now, in this regard, there's a section, I think 146 in the Constitution, that empowers national government departments to introduce universal uniform national standard setting in all areas of governance, provided that such is intended to achieve any of the or all of the seven objectives listed. I think paragraph A to G of that subsection 2 of that section. And I gave an example earlier this morning of how we at Social Development back in 1997 were able to retrieve the entire social grant system in this country and nationalize it in order to make sure that every South African in South Africa who qualifies for any category of a grant is guaranteed access to that grant, irrespective of which municipality, rich or poor, which province, rich or poor, which urban or rural area of this country, wall to wall, has the same, exactly the same rights when it comes to social grants. Now, of course, with housing, it's slightly more complicated than that. But I ask the question, in 27 years, what measures have you taken as this portfolio to make sure that at a national level, you lead from the front? You set norms and standards, not in policy, but in law, in enforceable law, that will result in a situation where you don't have
recording the stopped.
The kind of report we had earlier, where you produce APPs, each province produces their own APPs, you're working towards the same goal, clearly articulated in the Constitution and the law, but your APPs are at cross purposes. There is no sense of commonality, as I understood your point, and that only 27 years later, you are beginning to work towards that. One, failing to whip the entire system in line, using your constitutional powers and not being threatened by federalistic tendencies and attitudes, but do your work, exercise your power under the Constitution and the law. We did it until this day. The social assistance
recording in progress
has never been successfully challenged on the basis that provincial powers were taken away or any other sphere of government interest or rights under the Constitution have been taken away. So boldness is required here. We raised the issue of title deeds on a number of occasions. I put it to the AG, to your to your reprieve, if that's the correct English, to say that as far as I understand, you don't register title deeds. You don't have that authority or competence. That lies with the deeds office that falls under the Department of Land Affairs, which is currently not a component within this ministry, if my facts are correct. Now, let's clarify what your understanding, because it's a value chain we understand. Let's clarify what your understanding of your
responsibility. Recording stopped.
Towards ensuring that the title deed performance area is ramped up, right? What is your understanding of your place in that value chain? But also, what's your understanding of your role in propelling the other components in the value chain to do their part, such as those that have to do the rezoning? You might not have the political or legal authority. And of course, the provisions of the Constitution do not allow you to quickly run to court at every other provocation to sue each other as government institutions. But tell us clearly, are you struggling? Are you struggling to mobilize a collective effort, not only between different portfolios that are involved in the land question, but also between the three spheres and their entities involved, right? And linked to this is that alongside, and I raised this earlier, alongside Section 21 initiative by Parliament, there was an initiative by the President that was delegated to the Deputy President to lead a multi-sectoral review of the land reform process. There was a committee of experts led by the late Professor Vio Mashati, bless her soul, and I believe it produced a report which was wide-ranging, and I don't think there's any issue of significance that relate to land that was not touched by that exercise. Now, I don't understand how we sit here and we engage with the Auditor General, with the DPME, with yourselves as the department and your entities, and nobody says absolutely nothing about it, as if it's never happened, when it had been initiated at the highest level, at the provincial, at the presidential level. And I know for a fact that your department was part of that process, because I used to go to Union Building representing justice there, and you used to come. But it's like as if this thing never happened. I mean, I don't understand how government will spend resources on processes of policy reform and seeking to improve performance. And then we sit here and some of this work just falls by the wayside and nobody says anything about it. How is that possible? I believe that the NDP itself, very often we just pay lip service to it. People quote it because, as a matter of course, they're expected to, just like the Constitution. People, let's take our frameworks that we ourselves participated in the development of seriously. Otherwise, we don't know what we're doing in our governance effort. But finally, in relation to this, I hope that between the leadership of this committee through the chair and the whip, my plea, which seems to gain traction from Honorable Powell there, that says that we have every right ourselves, put aside the department. If they want, they can do this. If they don't want, that's their problem. But we must have a session, chair, with all three spheres here. And they must talk to us at the same time and hear each other and let us listen to what they have to say to us as a collective and in their individual capacities around some of these issues. I am not aware of any law or any provision of the Constitution that prohibits us from doing so. And I'm not aware of any requirement in the rules that needs us to seek permission from anyone. Whether those people are in government or even in the private sector or outside of any of the two. So I really think that the issue of coordination, now it's about time we stop paying lip service to it, and whether at the level of parliament or at the level of government, we really take it head on. And finally, Chair, I know that Honorable Powell has promised me to provide me factual information to confirm that my statement that I made earlier was wrong, that the Western Cape has tilted in favor of prioritizing rental stock over the issuing of title deeds in order to ensure that we reverse the legacy of 1913 Land Act, and namely that of ensuring that the inequality that was built over a century or almost relating to asset accumulation or wealth accumulation through physical asset ownership. And that explains significantly why there is such economic disparities in this country along racial lines, that such is false. I don't know if this department has facts to support me in this allegation. And if you have facts to agree with Honorable Powell that my statement is a lie, please tell me in my face and say I am wrong about the department, I mean about the province of the Western Cape. And I will concede to that if the facts are put to me. Thank you very much, Chair.
Honorable Sesuai. Honorable Sesuai.
Chairperson, thank you very much. While one is not able to direct the questions in individual programs, but I think the presentation made by AG and DPM has helped us in analyzing the performance of the department, and at the same time speaking more on the action plans that have been developed, which some of them have not been implemented well. The AG is raising its critical role in assisting the department, that is of the strengthening of democracy, to assist in particular our oversight role as the committee. And I think that is mouthful. Then keeps on raising areas of performance that are concerning AG on the basis of there have been action plans that have been developed, but still the implementation is not yielding any results for the department and for the benefits of the service delivered. One of the issues that is raising is that there seems to be an inability to the management to resolve the findings that have been made. In particular, in terms of the identified irregular expenditure and very, very clear financial statements that are not adequate. HDA is one of those agents that have been identified with such. There are no clean audits yet, whereas action plans have been made, which are to help the department towards a clean audit. The action plans that have been made are not adequate. And there's a mention of an NFC and the NHBRC. And in listening in the presentation that have been made already, we have an entity called CISOS, which has, for the past 3 years, unable to present very clear, credible systems for collection from different schemes. One would get to know from the department in terms of what could be the reasons. Has there been a very clear analysis of the root cause of why CISOs may happen that identified a lot of schemes and then able to swallow? HDA is a development agent of the department. It represents the department well. And the department is a national department. Its weaknesses are alarming, but you are not getting a very clear consequence management. And doesn't able to build clear systems towards performance. The quality on the financial statement deserves a lot to be desired. And that this speaks about the ability of the management to oversee lower levels of officials. In some of the entities, there are no internal audits, internal auditors. And remember what the role of the internal auditors, it helps internally to deal with the issues that makes a better performance of the department. And when you do not have an internal audit, how do you monitor the performance critically in internally? NHBRC is showing continuously the lack of professional skills, because their action plan, they continue to be not adequate. Remember again, the NHBRC chamber to assess a clear performance in terms of the housing. The customization of indicators is one area which also speaks about the lack of coordination between levels of government, province and municipalities. And one typical example is the issue of the internet, where you are unable to give certificates to the house owners because there are challenges within the municipalities. And this continues to be a problem every financial year. What does it mean to give me a title deed? How do I feel? You've changed my economic position. You've alleviated poverty from me. You've made me a somebody whom have never been there for years because of the previous systems of government. Even now, we are unable to give them title deeds because of the poor coordination between the levels of government. Now, the question what one would like to know is the intergovernmental relations not helping? Is also the integrated development model not helping in terms of addressing this particular issue? What is the strategy of the department to address the matter? It's a critical issue because houses are there, been built already, but I don't have ownership. The procurement continues also to be a challenge within different entities and the department. There's a very clear lack of professionalizing the government program and give legitimacy. Remember, we are not a banana republic. So we've got to do the issues within the law. Now, why this is a problem? And it also talks about the poor performance at a management level. The internal controls continues to be a problem within independent entities and also the department. One of the issues that also is picked in this is the lack of proper record keeping. The lack of record keeping is a small issue and it results a lot to be desired because you are unable to present well your professional approach. Chair, we continue to hear about the Limpopo, where there has been a program and a project which was not implemented well, and SIU did an investigation, and what you are not getting is a very clear consequence management in terms of the outcomes of the investigation by SIU. And why is this like this? What is the problem? It worries us because when you are going to a process of investigation, you didn't want Uber, but SIU is a professional organization to do that for us. And why are we not implementing the recommendations of SIU? In the program of the department, there's a logical framework which clarifies activities as you go down. At which level where you are unable to see the deviation of the program, because as you put that logical framework, you know exactly where you're going to. Now, is it not easy to see where is the deviation and you are able to have a strategic turnaround to make the program to get to what it wants to be and you achieve the objectives? Whose role is to do that up until the program gets to be, doesn't achieve its objectives? DME is raising the same issue raised by AG, saying that the performance of the department is worrying. And this continued to be like that from the previous years. There is no clear program performance evaluation during the implementation of the program. Up until the program, the objectives are not achieved. Raising two areas which the department is unable to focus on. This is not about, we're not personal to anyone on the program. We're just analyzing areas which are expected to be done by officials and the management. And also to say, please, management, please try to do your overall monitoring and be able to assist the officials. And the officials themselves must be able to work towards the achievement of the objectives. Raising two principles. Say, in the program, when you want to evaluate your performance yourself, you must look on the results. The results-based management helps you to be specific on the obtaining of the results that you want to focus on. And the clarity is, develop a turnaround strategy when you see that the program is deviating. Don't move and continue until you don't achieve your objectives, because there's going to be a budget waste in the process. If you don't see the deviation as you deviate from your logical framework, the management should be able to see that and assist you so that you don't continue to do something wrong. There is also the issue of the theory-based evaluation, which is something similar to the logical model. There's an input, output, outcome, until you get to the impact. And in that process, you get to the depth of the program. Up until sometimes, you stop the project. You stop the project because it's not getting to where you want it to be. The issue that is raised by GPM is that it's very difficult to see such processes in the program. If they are there, they are not visible, and why? One of the issues that we raised from both parties, AG and DPMA, we are in a unitary state here. It seems as if you wait until the department gives you a report at the end of the financial year, and you don't see yourself. You do not see yourself as part of democratization of service delivery and helping the people of this country. Utafin. Now, it becomes important that we must see you helping. And they defended themselves. They said there are times where we come in and assist them in terms of their action plans, and also we discover that they've got established indicators that are not measurable, and we intervene and try to assist them. And we appreciated that. We want to appeal to the department that they should not see that as as big brothers. They should appreciate that, because at the end of the day, we also want to improve service delivery and also assist in the budget to get to where we want it to get to. I hear that there's a capacity development program that is underway, which we will appreciate well, so that where there are weaknesses, we are able to strengthen that. The last one, Chair, the real last one. There's continuity of funds that are being redirected from other provinces to other provinces. It's fine as how management has seen, because there's no utilization and no performance. But remember, what communities want, they want service delivery. For their money to be taken to their province, and sometimes the reason is not known to them. What if the reasons continues to be recurring? Because one doesn't know if perhaps the areas of non-performance have been addressed. The recurring of the same, what's going to happen? Typical of the Eastern Cape, because this continues to happen. Now, why this issue is not addressed? Because at another time, people could turn around government to say, this is our money. This is our money. So I'm raising the issue, Chair, to say, please, let this matter not to continue all the financial years. Let it be addressed so that it does not happen. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Honorable Butaseki, your hand is still up. Honorable Seki.
Chairperson, it's an old hand, but there's something that just came up that I've wrote on the chat that Comrade, that Member Powell is taking advantage of Comrade Mike and lambasting Comrade Mike on that. And I hope Comrade Mike will read that after the meeting and able to respond, because I think, Chair, you must call Member Powell out of order. Noting the state of Comrade Mike. Now she is playing on the gallery of something that he knows exactly that what is happening in the Western Cape. So that's my submission, Chair. Call Member Powell to order, please.
Honorable members, let's not throw one another with words through the chat. The chat is meant to raise constructive issues. If members you are not happy with the statement, you are allowed, honourable member, to interact in the manner that the member could actually be able to respond. Please, thank you, Minister, and your team. There are a lot of questions.
My hand is up.
Honorable Powell, is a follow-up?
No, just a response. Because we seem to pick on people in this committee, calling people by names. So I didn't want to waste the official's time by calling a point of order on Mr. Masuta's very direct attack on me. I didn't mention him by name other than in complimentary statements agreeing with him. So I didn't want to waste everybody's time by calling a point of order and objecting to his comments like I frequently have to do. So I put my comments in the chat group. Now, if there is going to be a ruling in this committee that one is not allowed to use the chat group, then we will abide by that, and I'm sure that Kaliswa can disable it. But so long as I am personally attacked in this committee, I will continue to defend myself. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable Powell, what I'm saying is that you could have raised the hand, because or maybe you are not aware that Honorable Mike might not have seen your chat because of the partial, because you will not be able to respond. But let me allow the department to respond to questions, because the interest should be for the department to respond to questions of members, so that it is becoming very clear. Honorable Mike, I'm not going to give you the chance to speak. Can we allow the department to speak? I can see now you are ready with your camera. I'm not noting you. Please, let's allow the department to respond. Minister, you'll then distribute, you'll lead us, and then you can then distribute your members accordingly to respond to the questions that have been raised. And I know that I've noted that there is a Honorable Buthelezi has raised issues with the Auditor General, and we had a full session with Auditor General. I'm not sure whether they are here, or we can then ask them to respond your question in writing, because we had the full session with them previously, Honorable Buthelezi. Now we were engaged in the department on the opinion and the that was raised by the Department of Planning and Monitoring and Evaluation and the Auditor General. I'm not sure whether Auditor General is here to, because there are specific questions addressed to them. If they are not here, we would have to get them to do it in writing. But we had the opportunity to interact with Auditor General in the previous session. Minister, you're welcome with your team. You can then respond.
Thanks, Chairperson. I'll be the last one to respond. I'm going to ask the DDGs responsible for programs together with the DG to respond, and then we'll come, the DM will come, and then I'll close. Just to indicate as well, there were questions that were specifically related to entities, and I would appeal through you, Chair, that those are reserved when the entities themselves appear before the Portfolio Committee on Friday. For example, there were quite a number of issues that relate to HDA that the accounting officers of the of those entities need to respond to. If it's about oversight, we will take it from the department's point of view. But when it relates to, so that we are not found wanting on governance protocols, that we end up responding on issues that relates to executive and accounting officers of the entities. So I'll hand over, maybe let me start with DDG Lishabani, and then followed by DDG Ngongo, DDG Cheney, and then DDG the CFO, and then DDG Lisolonyani will be followed. And then the last one will be 18 DDG, so COPO, and then DG can conclude, just to assist so that we move faster.
DDG Lishabani.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Minister. There are several questions that would relate to the programs. I will I'll address them in their turn. Chairperson, the first question related to the correction of misstatements in Program 2. And Minister and Chairperson, I can confirm that the correction was effected as it would have related to the reported development plans for the declared priority development areas. In the discussion or in the engagement with AG, it became clear that in as much as we made the choice in here that where there are plans, there is no need to develop new plans, but rather we will recognize those plans. However, the DG, not the DG, the AG was of the view that our target was to develop plans, and therefore, because we didn't develop plans, or but rather recognize the existing plans, that would then be non-achievement on our side. So we then revised our submission to then lower the number of new plans developed, because we maintained that we had to be honest, there was no need to duplicate and develop new plans where municipalities had plans that were sufficient. That is in relation to program two, the restatement of the initial reported achievement. Chairperson, I can also confirm that the projects monitoring, all the years, we do undertake monitoring of projects that are under implementation. However, this time around, the AG found that the portfolio of evidence that supports our oversight and project level monitoring was inadequate, and therefore that was the finding. Similarly, Chair, we could not appoint the service provider for the evaluations for both the informal settlements upgrading as well as the rental housing tribunals, simply because the initial round of bids were non-responsive, so we had to go back to the market, and therefore that ate a lot of our time in that respect. Chair, the further question, and I take it that the member Mokgotu was drawing the minister's attention to the incomplete or unallocated houses that are now vandalized in Greater Taung, the ones that's indicated. This matter, Chairperson, I can confirm that it would require investigation. When I mean investigation, I mean we will have to go engage with the province and verify what exactly transpired. In any case, Chairperson, the department is coming back to the committee to report to yourselves on the prevalence of incomplete housing projects on the 1st of December, but we will attend to that matter specifically, Chairperson. I turn, Chairperson, to further questions that arose. Chair, I can confirm that the committee would be aware that the declaration of the 136 priority human settlements and housing development areas was gazetted in May 2020. Now, at that point, Chairperson, the provincial delivery plans and the projects that are funded were already approved anyway by the end of March 2020. Now, most provinces could not reconcile what they are investing in these declared areas because the proverbial horse of project funding had already bolted. And therefore, the investment in those areas realistically can be upheld in this round of delivery plans as we move forward. Chair, we also can confirm, and perhaps this is instructive, in that when you look at slide 20 in our presentation, Chairperson, you will see that the department undertakes a rigorous verification of whatever provinces report as title deeds that they have registered. Now, our verification, Chairperson, is reflected on slide 20. And you will see, Chairperson, that for us to report on the performance of title deeds, we insist on verifying what is reported by the provinces. Otherwise, Chair, we are found wanting by the Auditor General because we have to produce the requisite verification of such. And therefore, Chair, the related aspect in that slide is what most members are calling for, the turnaround intervention because the program is not performing. Chairperson, as we previously reported to the committee, the department has had to put together a turnaround strategy and plan. The cornerstone of that plan, simply put, is to ensure that those settlements that have outstanding township formalization or proclamations, that becomes the first priority. and the chairperson, we will be more than happy to confirm also that we have now moved to strengthen the collaboration with multiple sector departments, because they have a part to play in the registration of such title deeds. Similarly, Chair, the rezoning of land in the declared priority development areas in itself remains a priority that we are pursuing. And again, in this instance, the lower performance in this instance is simply that the applications for the rezoning are in the system, have been submitted to the relevant municipalities. However, there is a time lag in the finalization and approval of those rezoning applications. But, Chairperson, that's a matter that we simply continue to pursue with municipalities, and I'm quite comfortable that as we move forward, we are able to obtain the results from those submissions, Chairperson. Chairperson, let me hasten to confirm also that the, and I skipped this part, my apology, as to why is the title restoration grant not spent, and therefore what was the intervention. Chairperson, the unspent portions of the grant, the provinces have had to secure rollovers, of which Treasury has approved those that are credible. Now, the underlying issues here is that most provinces realize much later in the financial year that unless you have township establishments in, concluded, there is no prospect of registering title because there is no township register. Hence, then they delayed in the appointment of the professionals to undertake township establishment. The consequence was therefore the under expenditure on the grant. Although the grant is discontinued, Chairperson, the funding for title deeds remains part and parcel of the House, Human Settlements Development Grant. So there is no loss of funding opportunity. The grant still funds the title deed and the restoration program. Chair, I take it that the, and that's the last part, Chairperson, from my side, safe to say that, let me leave my colleagues to attend to the balance of the questions, unless I've missed anyone so far, I don't see, Chair. Thank you, Minister.
Thank you, Minister. Afternoon. Chair, just to indicate on the matter that was raised by Member Powell regarding the rental relief, based on the suggestion by Minister, there's a detailed report that has been requested by the portfolio. I think it's on the 2nd of December, which will detail exactly the policy together with the program implementation by the shrine, what are some of those constraints and the reasons for where we sit now, with particularly in relation to the take-up. So with the permission of yourself together with the minister, I'm assuming that would be best done at that stage, because it would then be able to allow us to vent that in a more proper manner and address the issues that are there. I think the issues around or the points that have been raised by Member Masuta are welcome. Particularly, I think the one issue that sometimes we miss, that our starting point is the Constitution, the NDP, the MTSF, and then you find that we have as a department the conundrum that exists between an audit finding and evaluation, which then goes against the grain of achieving a constitutional or a mandate objective, and how do we resolve that issue? But I think the one issue the issue is that ministers has indicated that we've got to finalize the issue around the question of the white paper on human settlements. And those are issues that will obviously come up in that matter. But I think it's obviously something that we must, and as quite rightly indicated, it's at the back of our minds that there's a developmental constitutional mandate that as a government we've got to be able to achieve, and we must never ever lose sight of that. And I think as a department, both politically and administratively, it's always something that we try and address through that. I think the one issue around the question which Mr. Shwan has indicated, but I just want to indicate around the question of what Member Mokhotu has raised around the issue around the program two indicators, particularly around the PHP. I think the understanding that we had was that the reliability of the evidence was not sufficient as determined by the AG. There was a number of iterations and consultations, but I don't think at any stage, and it is not something that we would do. It's against the principles of being a public servant that we would mislead or misrepresent or try and obfuscate matters in relation to the Auditor General. No, as a Chapter 9 institution, that's something we would never do. Thanks, Minister BG. I'm not sure if there's any other points that I've raised or haven't considered. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Proceed, DDG. Thank you very much, Chair. I think just on the point, the last point, and which was also responded to Chairperson by DDG Lishabane and covered by Mr. Cheney. I think just to be specific on that note, I think it was more on at the same time by the AG not accepting our population as sampled by them, because they were actually not saying it's not reliable. So we agreed with them that moving forward with everything that they have actually found wanting in as far as the smartness principles of our indicators, it's the matter that we are dealing with to correct the APP for the next financial year, just so that we deal with these issues and not to have these recurring issues as identified by the AG in the current financial year or the financial year audited and under review. And similarly with the issue of the Zenzeleni program, we also accept that the planning from the initial stage was not proper, or indicators were not aligned. And I think more DG would often say that if you do a bad planning, expected bad outcome. So we are cleaning up that mess as well that we have created ourselves. And as we are looking at it, we noticed that it was not even clear from the beginning of what the indicators would be expected to yield the outcome and deliverables. What we are doing, Chairperson, on all these issues of the AG, just to sum them up, so to say, is the matter of saying the involvement of the other stakeholders that are contributory, including our DPME, and our AG as well, because we wanted to involve the AG with all these findings. So the DPME is part of our process, and we've started with those alignment or customization of our indicators together with our provinces as well. Chairperson, on the issue of the internal control, or rather maybe let me start with the fruitless and wasteful expenditure and consequence management as indicated by Member Mokhotu. The one on the pension fund that got delayed, we have instituted a consequence management because we did realize that it was a fruitless and wasteful expenditure. And we recommended for the money to be deducted from the employees affected. And as per also the ruling by the internal audit as well as the labor relation unit that is held the disciplinary action. I ordered a disciplinary hearing over the officials, chairperson. So we have instituted that. And then we've also recommended by the audit committee, the case is also currently under the labor to the value of the 198 million chair. On the irregular expenditure consequence management, we are also aware that there is that amount that is in there that we have disclosed in our annual report, and the disciplinary as an assessment has been also recommended by the internal audit, and the matter is also under labor relationship person. And then any other irregular expenditure that has been identified, it's under assessment, and we can only disclose it after the assessment has been finalized, and whether, depending on the results of the assessment, if it is a irregular expenditure, it will be declared as such in the annual report, and furthermore, the consequence management will be instituted subsequent to the results that will come through the internal audit and the labor relations. And I do want to indicate that just at the end, on the internal control deficiency check, on the issues that were raised by the AG on the targets and indicators, it's a matter of saying we still go ahead with our APP. We have not finalized it. We've started with the process. The draft has been done. And I think at this point in time, we looked at all the issues that the AG has identified, and having committed by all programs, including all the programs that are going to be audited for next year, that's possible, which is program 2 to program 5, with program 1 being the defined program that is every time audited by the AG. It's not a question. However, we looked at all the programs, that the possibility of AG coming and even audit on 2 programs is very high. So we're tying all the corners and the loose ends that we've experienced in this financial year through the current APP. It will not solve the problem of the past, but it will enable us not to have these repeated findings, because where we are sitting, we are failing ourselves in the system if we are not planning properly as well. Chair, thank you very much. I will leave the rest to my colleagues. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, Honourable Minister, Honourable Deputy Minister. I will piggyback on the response from the Honourable Minister on the stabilisation of the entities, and on the questions that are specifically related to the entities, to respond to them when the entities are presenting. I want to respond to the question on the capacity development going forward. I want to indicate that as a department, we are repositioning our capacity assembly as part of the IGR in the sector, where our main objective is to create an enabling environment for the sector to perform. When we're repositioning, we also want to ensure that the skills that are being assembled at the provincial level also, and most of them are the residents of the respective provinces. And that also we will pay special attention to the vulnerable groups, inclusion of women, youth, and people with disability as part of the economic transformation within the sector. Honourable Chairperson, the last point that I want to make also as part of the IGR from the department is that when we reposition our capacity assembly and we enhance our IGR participation, we also believe that this will assist in the issuing of title deeds as well as has been indicated in this meeting. As we know that the issuing of title deeds is not going to be achieved without the participation of the all three spheres of government. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Minister. Thank you, Honourable Members. I just will give one point regarding the internal capacity at the department. And as my colleague just mentioned about it being one of the priority externally, internally also we are going to increase our ability to support the provinces, municipalities, and the oversight to the entities. We hope to move with speed in the issues of vacancy reduction and ensure that our programs are properly supported. And this is one of our priorities, I think, in this current space. And we hope there'll be some improvements when we come back to report to this forum again. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm going to talk about the informal settlements, the questions that were related to informal settlements. Some have already been responded to by Mr. Shabane, in particular the evaluation study. I am going to respond to what we are doing differently to ensure that we achieve the MTSF target. First of all, as my other colleagues have indicated, we have started to regionalize our operations to make sure that then we provide project-level support to municipalities.